Welcome back to the Kurdish Research Audio Archive.
Good to be back. Today we're looking into something really interesting.
Yeah, the potential connections between ancient Gnosticism and two Kurdish religions, Yazididism and Yarsinism, also called Ali Hak or Kakai.
Exactly. We're drawing on a scholarly analysis, Gnosticism and Kurdish religions, plus encyclopedias, articles, basically unpacking the academic discussion.
Looking for links, differences, maybe shared roots, all based on the sources.
That's the plan. We want to trace the arguments, see where the overlaps might be, where they diverge.
And for you, the learner, hopefully this will be a clear path through some, well, complex ideas. We'll highlight maybe some surprising bits, those aha moments, without it getting too overwhelming.
Right. Definitions first, then the arguments for and against these connections.
Okay, let's start with Gnosticism. The name itself, Gnosis, Greek for knowledge.
Yes, but it wasn't just everyday knowledge, was it?
No, it was more like revealed insight, divine secrets.
Precisely. A special understanding of divine mysteries. And crucially, this Gnosis was seen as the key to salvation.
Which is a pretty different path compared to, say, mainstream Judaism or Christianity at the time, which focused more on faith or works.
Absolutely. Gnostics kind of saw themselves as the initiated, the people who knew. It often involved a sense that the material world itself was flawed, even evil.
That's a radical idea right there. Mm. And this term Gnosticism, they didn't call themselves that, did they?
No, not really. Gnosticism is more of a modern scholarly label. It's an umbrella term, you know.
Covering a whole bunch of different sects.
A really diverse range, yeah. Active mostly from the 1st to the 5th centuries CE. They had varied myths, rituals. It's a scholarly construct, really, trying to group similar trends.
Okay, so what were some of those common threads, those core ideas running through these Gnostic groups?
Well, a big one was dualism, a really stark contrast.
Between
the spiritual realm seen as good, light, and the material cosmos, which they often viewed as evil, dark, a kind of prison.
And this struggle played out inside people, too.
Yes. The idea was that humans have a divine spark, like a fragment of the good spiritual world, but it's trapped inside the material body. So there's this inherent pessimism about the created world.
Their view of God, or the gods, was also pretty unique, wasn't it?
Very much so. They typically distinguish between a supreme, transcendent God, remote, unknowable, perfect, and the creator of this material world.
Ah, the demiurge. I remember that term.
That's the one. Often seen as ignorant, sometimes malicious. Some Gnostic texts even identified this demiurge with the God of the Old Testament.
Wow. So if the ultimate God is perfect, how did they explain this flawed creation? Why trap these divine sparks?
Through concepts like emanations and the pleroma.
Pleroma meaning fullness.
So the fullness of the divine realm, yes. The idea was that divine beings called eons emanated, sort of flowed out from the ultimate God.
Like stages or aspects of the divine, not separate gods.
Kind of, yes. And the creation of our flawed world was often explained as the result of some disruption, a fall or mistake within this pleroma.
Which led to those divine sparks getting trapped down here in matter.
Exactly. And salvation, then, was all about liberating that spark.
Through Gnosis, the knowledge.
Right. Gnosis reveals your true identity that you are, that spark your divine origin, why you're trapped, and how to get back.
Often with the help of a redeemer figure.
Often, yes. Someone who brings that saving knowledge. And this wasn't just intellectual head knowledge, you see. It was experiential, revelatory.
And practices like asceticism or rituals could be part of it too?
Sometimes, yes. Though approaches varied widely between groups, it's also worth mentioning that many Gnostic groups had a somewhat elitist view.
How so?
They often divided humanity into categories, the spiritual ones who could attain Gnosis, the psychic ones who might achieve a lesser salvation, and the material ones who were, well, lost.
Okay. Geographically, where did all this take place? And when?
Primarily in the Hellenized Near East. Think Eastern Mediterranean, Egypt, Syria, Mesopotamia, Persia. That whole region.
A real melting pot of ideas back then.
Definitely. It started around the 1st century CE, really peaked in the 2nd and 3rd centuries.
And its roots are mixed?
Very mixed. Scholars see influences from heterodox Judaism, early Christianity, Greek philosophy, mystery religions, maybe even Iranian ideas.
The Nag Hammadi library discovery was huge for understanding this, wasn't it?
Absolutely crucial. It gave us actual Gnostic texts. Before that, we mostly knew about them from their opponents.
And places like Mesopotamia, the Zagros Mountains.
Yeah.
They were key zones.
Yes, crossroads where these different cultures and ideas met and mingled.
Now, within Persia or Iran, Gnosticism took specific forms, like Manichaeism.
Right. Manichaeism, founded by Mani in the 3rd century, was a major world religion for a time, a distinct Gnostic system with a very radical light versus darkness dualism.
And Mandaeism.
Mandaeism, too, still exists today. Strong roots in Mesopotamia and southwestern Iran, also dualistic, big emphasis on baptism.
What about Zoroastrianism? Did it influence Gnosticism?
That's a complex debate among scholars. Zoroastrianism, with its own dualistic elements, was dominant in Persia. There was likely interaction, but the exact nature and extent of its influence on Gnosticism is still discussed.
Okay, that gives us a good grounding in Gnosticism. Diverse, dualistic, emphasis on secret knowledge.
Oh.
Hannah the Chai Lady is here. Roj Bosh Hannah.
Ah, wonderful timing. Just when we needed it.
Let's see what she's brought us today. Pause. How's yours? Mine's lovely. Fragrant.
Mine too. It's really smooth today. Not bitter at all. Sometimes it needs a bit more sugar, but this is perfect.
Agreed. Hannah's worked her magic again. A perfect little pause.
Definitely helps clear the head before we tackle the next part.
Right then. Refreshed. Let's turn to Yazidism. What should we know about this tradition?
Okay, Yazidism. It's a monotheistic faith, mainly practiced by Kurdish speakers. They often call their religion Sharfedin and themselves Yazidi.
Indigenous to the Kurdistan region, northern Iraq, Syria, Turkey.
That's their heartland, yes. And their most sacred site is Lalish in northern Iraq.
And sadly, they have faced terrible persecution over the centuries.
A horrific history, yes. Often tragically misunderstood as devil worshippers, which is completely wrong. This culminated recently in the genocide by ISIS.
It's crucial to understand Buso Melek, the peacock angel, isn't the devil figure of Abrahamic traditions at all, right?
Absolutely not. He's the chief angel, God's representative on earth, a benevolent figure. That misunderstanding has been the source of so much suffering.
They're also a very distinct community, socially.
Yes, traditionally endogamous, meaning they marry within the community. Membership is by birth. There's ongoing discussion about their identity as an ethno-religious group.
Okay, let's get into their core beliefs. One God.
One transcendent God, yes. Called Exuide or Izdan. But this god is generally seen as somewhat remote, not directly involved in day-to-day world affairs.
So who is involved?
That's where Tawi Samelek comes in, the peacock angel. He's the chief of the seven angels, or seven holy beings, the Hefsir.
And these seven angels?
They are considered emanations from God, and they administer the world, led by Tawi Samelek. They're the active forces.
Kind of like intermediaries. Are they linked to Abrahamic archangels?
Sometimes identifications are made, but they have their own specific Yazidi names and roles. Some scholars also talk about a kind of divine triad, God, Tawi Samelek, and Sheikh Adi ibn Musafir, a key historical figure.
Sheikh Adi. We'll come back to him when we discuss origins. What about their creation story?
It's quite distinct. They believe the world originated from a white pearl, the Dur.
And their origin as a people is also unique.
Yes, a belief that Yazidis descend solely from Adam, not from Adam and Eve together.
Fascinating. Do they have concepts like reincarnation?
They do. Metempsychosis, the transmigration of souls, is central. It's a process of purification. Sheikh Adi himself is believed by some to have attained divinity through this cycle. They also have concepts of heaven and hell.
And like many religions, there are rules about purity, certain taboos.
Yes. Dietary laws, lettuce is famously taboo, sometimes fish. Rules about clothing, like avoiding the color blue traditionally. And speech taboos, avoiding words that sound like Satan.
Also restrictions on interacting with outsiders. And a caste system.
Traditionally, yes. Contact with non-Yazidis was limited, and they have a hereditary caste system. Sheikhs and peers are the religious leaders, and murids are the laity. Marriage between castes or outside the community is forbidden.
Now, there's sacred traditions. You mentioned Sheikh Adi. Are there written texts?
It's primarily an oral tradition. That's really key.
So knowledge is passed down through spoken word, hymns, poems.
Exactly. Specialist reciters called kuwals memorize and transmit the sacred hymns, kuwals, and poems, baits.
What about the famous Black Book and Book of Revelation, the Kitab al-Jilwa and Madaf Rash?
Those are generally considered by scholars to be later compilations, maybe 19th century, likely based on the oral traditions, but not ancient scriptures in the same way. The oral corpus is primary.
Okay. And the origins of Yazidism itself? That's debated.
Hugely debated. One main line of thought emphasizes Sufi Islamic roots.
Through Sheikh Adi ibn Muzaffir. He was a Sufi mystic, wasn't he?
Yes. Founder of the Adawiya Sufi order in the 12th century. Some scholars see Yazidism evolving out of his movement.
But others see much older pre-Islamic influences.
Right. pointing to elements that seem to connect to ancient Iranian religions, maybe Zoroastrianism, Mithraism, reverence for sun and fire, cosmological ideas, linguistic traces, too.
And potential links to Christianity, Manichaeism, and Gnosticism.
Those possibilities are also raised, yes. Especially when looking for the deeper, older layers within the oral hymns, the cules.
So it's likely a blend.
Syncretism.
That's the most common view now. A syncretic religion formed on a local Kurdish base, absorbing elements from various sources over time, with Sheikh Adi's Sufi movement providing maybe an organizing framework, but incorporating much older beliefs.
Okay, so keep Yazidism in mind, the seven angels, Tawusi Malik, oral tradition, the origin debate as we move to Yarsinism, also known as Alahak or Kakai. What defines this tradition? Yarsinism is another syncretic faith, often described as esoteric. It was founded, or perhaps systematized, by a figure named Sultan Sahak.
When and where?
Late 14th, early 15th century CE. Centered in western Iran, Kermanshah, Lorestan, and parts of Iraqi Kurdistan like Kirkuk and Khanaqin.
And adherents are called Yarsin al-Hik.
Yarsin, friends, Ali-Hak, people of truth, or Kakai, especially in Iraq. They generally reject the term Ali-Elahi, which others sometimes use for them.
Are there related groups?
Yes. The Shabak community in Iraq is considered closely related. Estimating their population is difficult, partly due to secrecy stemming from persecution and lack of official recognition.
So what are their core theological ideas? What's really distinctive?
Perhaps the most central concept is Mazhariyat divine manifestations.
Meaning?
The belief that the divine essence manifests itself successively in human form throughout history. They identify seven major epochs, each with a primary divine figure.
Like avatars. And who are key figures?
Key manifestations include Ali ibn Abi Talib, the fourth caliph revered by Shia Muslims, and Sultan Sahak himself. This belief fundamentally challenges the Islamic concept of the finality of prophethood.
And like the Yazidis, they also have seven angels.
Yes. The Heftan, the seven persons or angels, these are secondary divine manifestations who accompany the primary one in each epoch.
Figures like Benjamin, Dawood.
In Sultan Sahak's epoch, yes. Benjamin, Dawood, Pirmuzi, Mustafa, Katuni Razbur are among them.
Do they also believe in reincarnation?
They do. It's called Dunaduni, a cycle of transmigration, specifically 1001 rebirths aimed at purification.
Is there a dualistic element too?
Yes, a form of dualism involving a cosmic struggle, and a belief that humanity is divided into those created from yellow clay, the Ali-Hak, destined for salvation, and those from black earth who are eternally damned.
That sounds quite stark. You also mentioned esotericism, inner and outer realities.
Very important, yes. The distinction between the Zahiri, outer material world, and the Batini, inner spiritual world.
And the Batini has its own rules, accessible through special knowledge.
Exactly. Through esoteric insight, called sir, and the specific teachings of the tradition. It's often termed a kind of Kurdish esotericism, likely influenced by Batini or esoteric Sufism.
Is it egalitarian, or is there a hierarchy?
Sources differ slightly. Some emphasize an egalitarian spirit, rejecting class distinctions. But there is a structure with ranks based on knowledge and a division between hereditary religious lineages, the Sayyids, or peers, and the lay followers, the Murids.
What about their sacred texts and rituals? Do they have the central scripture?
Yes, the Kalam-e-Saranjam, meaning Discourse of the Conclusion. It's believed to contain Sultan Sahak's teachings, compiled in the 15th century.
Is it a single book?
It's more a collection of sacred discourses, kalam, or distinct manuscripts, dafter, traditionally transmitted orally, even after being written down.
What language is it in?
Primarily Gorani Kurdish, though later texts were composed in Persian by figures like Haj Nimatollah Jehunabadi.
And rituals, what's central?
The jam ceremony. It's a communal gathering, usually seated in a circle. It involves chanting deck of the sacred kalams, often accompanied by the tambur lute, making offerings, nyas, and sharing a communal meal, which frequently includes a sacrifice, korbani.
Is there an initiation?
Yes, the sarsaporten, entrusting the head, ritual, which takes place during the jam.
Okay, and Yarsinism's origins, its relationship with Islam, also complex.
Very much so. Its crystallized form is traced to Sultan Sahak, near the Iran-Iraq border. He's linked by some sources to the Barzanji Sufi family.
So potential Sufi connections again. How is it viewed in relation to Islam?
It's contested. Some scholars classify it as a form of Gulat Shiism, extreme Shiism, or an offshoot of esoteric Batini Sufism. They point to the veneration of Ali, Sufi terminology, parallels with groups like the Alawis, Nosiris.
But others argue it's fundamentally not Islamic.
Yes, based on doctrines like Masariyat, divine manifestation, and Dunaduni, reincarnation, and their non-observance of standard Islamic pillars like prayer and fasting. Attempts by some modern figures to align it more closely with mainstream Tolver Shiaism haven't been universally accepted within the community.
So similar ambiguities to Yazidism's origins.
Exactly. A complex history interacting with Islam, Sufism, and likely older local traditions.
All right. Now we have pictures of Gnosticism, Yazidism, and Yarsinism. Let's start weaving them together. Gnosticism and Yazidism first. Have scholars seen links here?
Yes, they have. Early Western observers sometimes noted parallels that seemed Gnostic.
But then the focus shifted.
For much of the 20th century, yes. The dominant view emphasized the Islamic, specifically Sufi, roots via Sheikh Ayri.
But more recently?
More recent scholarship has started revisiting those potential deeper, non-Islamic roots, including possible Gnostic connections, though scholars like Philip Cranbrook caution against simplistic derivations and stress understanding Yazidism through its own oral framework and likely Iranian religious background.
So not necessarily direct descent, but maybe influence or shared ideas.
That's the kind of nuance emerging. Scholars like Asatrian and Eric Kaleva argue for Gnostic, Christian, and pagan elements surviving within what became a primarily Islamic substrate, perhaps transmitted via Sufism. They talk about Gnostic hangovers.
And others look at specific parallels, like in cosmology.
Yes. Mesis Radzevich, for example, explored parallels between the Yazidi creation from a pearl myth and Tawusi Melek, with ideas in ancient Greek cosmogonies, Platonism, and Gnosticism. He suggests either a genetic relationship or maybe independent expressions of similar ancient ideas.
So it's tricky to distinguish direct influence from shared sources or just similar types of religious thinking arising independently.
Exactly. That's the core challenge, especially with a primarily oral tradition like Yazidism.
Okay, let's look at specifics. What parallels are suggested? Cosmology, the pearl.
The Yazidi pearl myth, Duder, does resonate with cosmogonic motifs found elsewhere, including some Gnostic systems.
What about dualism? Gnosticism is strongly dualistic.
Yazidi thought has dualistic aspects. Tawusi Melek oversees both good and evil in the world, but it's generally seen as different from the radical ontological dualism of many Gnostic systems, where you have a good god versus an evil creator demiurge.
So Yazidism isn't quite as anti-world or anti-cosmos as some Gnostic strands.
Generally not, no. The world, while managed by Tawusi Melek, isn't inherently evil in the same way.
What about the intermediaries, the Yazidi seven angels and the Gnostic eons or archons?
Structurally, there's a resemblance, a hierarchy of divine beings between the ultimate god and the world. But their functions and moral alignment differ.
Oh, so?
The Yazidi angels are generally benevolent administrators. Gnostic archons, on the other hand, are often portrayed as hostile powers, rulers of the flawed material cosmos, obstacles to salvation.
Interesting distinction. Any other symbolic parallels? The snake, maybe?
The snake symbol appears in Yazidi lore, like the relief at Lalish. Some have suggested this could be a remnant of Gnostic symbolism.
Because some Gnostics reinterpreted the serpent in Genesis positively, as a bringer of knowledge.
Exactly, reacting against the orthodox interpretation. However, snake symbolism is incredibly widespread in the ancient Near East, so it's hard to pin it solely on Gnosticism.
Okay, what about origin myths? The Yazidi descent from Adam alone.
This is potentially a more specific link. It resonates with certain Gnostic traditions, particularly Sethian Gnosticism.
Sethian, from Seth, Adam and Eve's son.
Yes. Sethian Gnostics often saw themselves as the spiritual descendants of Seth, an elect group possessing the divine spark, the idea of a special, separate lineage.
And there's specific research on this Yazidi link.
Yes, Cranbrook and Omar Khali wrote a paper titled Shahid Binjar, Forefather of the Yazidis and the Gnostic Seed of Seth, exploring exactly this parallel. The focus on a unique origin and inherent spiritual status offers perhaps a stronger resonance than more general themes.
What about salvation? Gnosis versus Yazidi practice.
Here the differences seem clearer. Gnosticism emphasizes individual salvation through esoteric gnosis. Yazidism puts much more emphasis on community, ritual observance, maintaining purity, and the hereditary religious castes. While esoteric knowledge exists within the Yazidi hierarchy, it's not presented as the sole means of salvation for everyone in the same way as Gnostic Gnosis.
So, summing up the Gnostic-Yazidi connection, complex, no definite proof of direct lineage.
That seems to be the consensus. There are intriguing parallels, especially mythological and symbolic ones, but these could derive from various ancient Near Eastern sources that both traditions might have drawn upon.
So indirect influence or a shared heritage seems more plausible than direct descent.
Yes. Gnostic ideas were certainly present in Mesopotamia, where Yazidism emerged. Sufism could have acted as a conduit for some Gnostic-like themes, or both Yazidism and Gnosticism might independently draw from older West Iranian religious thought.
The oral nature of Yazidism makes tracing definitive lines very difficult.
Extremely difficult. So resonance, maybe some indirect absorption of ideas floating in the cultural milieu, seems more likely than saying Yazidism is a Gnostic survival.
Okay, let's apply a similar analysis to Yarsinism. Are there thematic resonances with Gnosticism here?
There certainly seem to be. The strong Yarsani emphasis on esotericism, the Batini inner reality versus the Zahiri outer reality, access through mystical insights, or definitely echoes the Gnostic focus on hidden, saving knowledge.
Yarsinism as Kurdish esotericism, you said.
Right. And the doctrine of Masoriyat, the sequential manifestation of the divine essence in human form.
The seven epochs, the primary figures.
That structure parallels Gnostic emanation theories, where you have eons descending or emerging from the ultimate godhead, the idea of divinity unfolding through intermediaries.
Even if the content differs, historical figures versus cosmic principles.
Yes, the underlying concept of staged divine self-disclosure is comparable.
What about dualism and Yarsinism? The yellow clay, black clay division.
That resonates strongly with Gnostic dualism, spirit versus matter, light versus darkness, the saved versus the damned. And the Yarsani division of humanity, based on their primordial substance, echoes Gnostic ideas about different human types, spiritual, psychic, material.
And their rejection of mainstream orthodoxy.
Their non-observance of standard Islamic practices parallels how Gnostic groups deviated from mainstream Judaism and Christianity, a sense of having a different, higher truth.
If there are Gnostic-like themes, how might they have reached Yarsinism? What are the proposed transmission routes?
The most commonly cited influences on Yarsinism are Sufism and heterodox Shiism. Sultan Sahak himself is linked to the Barzanji Sufi order.
So these Islamic mystical currents could have carried Gnostic-like ideas.
It's quite plausible. Esoteric interpretations, ideas of divine illumination, the elevated status of the imam or peer, even incarnationist tendencies within some Gulat Shiite groups, these could have preserved or reinterpreted themes that had Gnostic origins or resonances.
Given that early Islam in Persia and Mesopotamia encountered Manichaeism and other Gnostic traditions.
Exactly. Elements like esotericism, light symbolism, dualism, emanations, manifestations did filter into certain streams of Shiite and Sufi thought. So transmission via these heterodox Islamic channels seems a likely pathway. One scholar, H. Helm, even specifically links the oldest Yarsani layer to Gulu extremist Shiite traditions originating in southern Mesopotamia.
How do scholars generally view the directness of the Yarsinism-Gnosticism link compared to the Yazidi one?
Based on the sources we looked at, there seems to be less explicit scholarly work directly arguing for a Gnostic origin for Yarsinism compared to Yazidism.
Some might group them together loosely.
Yes, you might see Yarsinism mentioned alongside Yazidism in broader discussions of Gnostic survivals. But detailed academic studies of Yarsinism tend to focus more on its development out of Sufism, Gulatism, and interaction with older Iranian or Kurdish traditions.
Like Chindis. During emphasizing mystical Islam adapted to Kurdish culture, or Hamzi looking at Zoroastrian links.
Precisely. The predominant narrative frames Yarsinism's distinct features more through internal Islamic developments interacting with the local Kurdish context.
So any Gnostic connection is seen as more implicit, maybe mediated through those Islamic channels.
That seems to be the general trend in the scholarship reviewed. Though the parallels themselves, the esotericism, the divine manifestations, the dualism, are definitely there and comparable to Gnostic structures.
Is there a key theological divergence, though?
Yes. A major one is soteriology, the path to salvation. Yarsinism has the Dunaduni, the cycle of 1001 reincarnations for purification. Most Gnostic systems aim to escape the cycle of rebirth entirely through achieving gnosis in this lifetime.
So similar structures in some areas, but a fundamentally different goal for the soul.
Right. It highlights that despite potential structural or thematic echoes, Yarsinism developed its own distinct theological framework.
Okay, let's broaden out slightly. What about the wider religious context?
Yeah.
Manichaeism, Zoroastrianism.
Both are important background factors. Manichaeism, itself a Gnostic religion born in 3rd century Persia, was present in the region and could have interacted with local traditions.
And Zoroastrianism, the dominant pre-Islamic religion of Iran.
Its ideas about dualism, cosmology, angels, the end times, these profoundly influenced Judaism, Christianity, Islam, and possibly Gnosticism itself. It formed part of the general religious atmosphere that both Yazidism and Yarsinism emerged from.
There's also the Yazdanism hypothesis, isn't there?
Yes, proposed by Mehrdad Izadi. He suggested an original pre-Islamic Kurdish religion called Yazdanism, focused on seven angels and reincarnation, and argued that Yazidism, Yarsinism, and Kurdish Elavism are surviving branches of it.
How is that hypothesis viewed academically?
It's largely disputed by specialists like Cranebrook and Foltz. They argue it lacks direct historical evidence and oversimplifies the very distinct histories and complex syncretic developments of each tradition.
So shared elements between these groups are more likely due to a common Western Iranian cultural and religious background rather than a single unified ancient religion.
That's the more accepted view, yes. And that shared background substrate could well have included Gnostic or Gnostic-adjacent ideas that influenced these traditions in different ways.
So as we wrap this up, it seems the connections between Gnosticism and Yazidism, Yarsinism are, well, complex and indirect.
Definitely. It's an intricate web. No clear, unbroken line of descent is proven for either tradition back to a specific Gnostic group.
But the scholarly discussion reveals some really compelling parallels.
Absolutely. In cosmology, creation myths, the role of intermediaries like angels or eons, the emphasis on esoteric or hidden knowledge, and certain types of dualistic thinking.
And the likely routes for any influence seem indirect, possibly through mystical Islam.
That appears the most plausible pathway. Through Sufism and heterodox Shiism, which themselves absorbed or interacted with Gnostic ideas circulating in the Near East centuries earlier.
Plus the possibility that they all drew independently from even older shared roots in the region.
That can't be discounted either. They might have tapped into similar ancient conceptual frameworks present in Iranian or Mesopotamian thought.
But ultimately, Yazidism and Yarsinism are clearly distinct faiths.
Absolutely. They stand as unique religious identities, each with its own developed theology, specific practices, sacred narratives, and social structures, deeply interwoven with Kurdish history and culture. Their syncretic nature is a testament to centuries of interaction in a religiously diverse landscape.
Hopefully, this exploration, drawing on the sources, has given you, the learner, a clearer picture of both the potential connections and the definite distinctiveness of these fascinating Kurdish faiths.
It certainly invites more questions, doesn't it, about how religious ideas travel, transform, and persist across cultures and vast stretches of time. What particular parallels or divergences struck you most during this discussion, and what further questions does it raise for you about religious evolution in this incredibly rich historical region?